We're going to have some fun tonight, get some good information. I hope everyone has their pen and paper out, because I guarantee you, you're going to get some great notes. Things you probably haven't even heard before in the world of persuasion, motivation, and influence. And I'm excited to be here tonight. I love this world of persuasion and influence, because I know right now, everything you want in life is on the other side of persuasion. I also know they didn't teach you in school. I also know the present-day training doesn't teach you the techniques that actually work. That's some of the things that we'll be focusing on today. We're going to talk about persuasion tips that will double your income, some things to watch out for as you go in the world of persuasion, and teach things that you can use right now. Because I have such a great passion and love for persuasion, because I realized early on in my life that persuasion was everything. You can't do anything without the world of persuasion. It's amazing as you look at the experts, people like Napoleon Hill. He interviewed hundreds of millionaires trying to find out what they had in common. He wrote the book, of course, Think and Grow Rich, and he came to the conclusion that persuasion is the magic ingredient. Dale Carnegie even said the only way to get anybody to do anything is by making the other person want to do it. And of course, Donald Trump, multi-billionaire, in his book, said, study the art of persuasion, practice it, develop an understanding of its profound value, made such a big difference. But it's so strange, they don't teach it to us in school. We might learn from other people who use military management, who say, do it or you're fired. Hate to break the news to you, but that's not persuasion, that's coercion. So we really need to take a look about why this is so important, and I have a question that's going to be a little painful for many of you, and it was painful for me. That's why I've dedicated the last 15 years of my life studying persuasion, categorizing what's working, what's not working. The question is this: how much money have you lost in your life with your inability to persuade? Because we're all in persuasion as a parent, leader, teacher, manager, whatever do we need to learn how to persuade. How much money have you lost? Well, we do persuasion IQs, and I'll tell you, the average is well into the millions, millions of dollars in lost revenue. Because you've had somebody you've talked to before that wanted your product or service, needed it, liked it, and could afford it. Everything was perfect. And you never heard from them again. They never returned your phone calls. What's happening? My job is this. After you talk to a client or a prospect, I talk to them and find out, why didn't they buy? Why weren't they persuaded by you? That's the things that we need to focus on as we go through this process, to teach you step by step how to do it. Persuasion is the key to your success. And it's interesting as we study persuaders that most people use the same persuasive technique over and over again. They use maybe 2 to 3, 4 if they're lucky. Top persuaders use 7 to 8 persuasive techniques. And we've found that there's over 120 persuasive techniques. And as Abraham Maslow says, if the only tool in your toolbox is a nail or a hammer, you treat everyone like a nail. And that's not what you want. You want to customize it. When you look at the keys to the piano persuasion, you have to ask yourself, are you playing chopsticks or are you playing Mozart? And it was a real eye-opener for me as I started to pursue my education, went and got a college degree. Everyone felt it was important to go get a master's degree in business. An MBA, spent all this money and realized they didn't teach me what I needed to know to be successful. The basics like persuasion and people skills. Those are the critical skills that make the big difference. Sure, they taught me a lot of different things, but the reality is these are the skills that make a difference. When you look at things like people skills, over 66% of the people downsized because of their inability to work with people, to communicate, to persuade. And here's the number that just floored me. In the United States, after 5 years, 96% of all businesses fail. Ouch. What's going on? What's happening? So the government's concerned. They sent the Small Business Administration out to find to figure out what's going on, what's happening. Dun and Bradstreet spent millions of dollars on research. And they both independently came to the same conclusion. Are you sitting down for this? All businesses fail because of a lack of sales. Duh. That comes back to persuasion and an influence. We're so concerned about every other thing. In fact, Dun & Bradstreet to D&B labeled it as managerial incompetence because it's not a skill that they've learned in school. They've kind of picked up along the way, and it's a skill that you can master. So that was my goal as I went through and I tried to figure out what was working, what was not working. And I've always been in the world of sales and persuasion. As a manager, as a general manager, as a CEO, as a sales manager, as a telemarketer, knocking door to door, always been in the world of persuasion and influence. And it was amazing. When I went to the university, I needed a job, and I finally got this job in telemarketing. I know it's your favorite, but I figured, well, I can talk to people. How hard can it be? And I walked in and I met all these people that were making thousands of dollars a week part-time. And I think to myself, whew, if they can do it, I can do it. Wow, what a reality check. Now, let me ask you, and I don't mean this in a negative way. Have you ever met someone that didn't seem that sharp but could persuade circles around you? They had some skills that you didn't. They weren't working quite as much. And that's the key. The key is to have the right tools. If I asked you to chop down a tree and gave you a pocket knife, sure, you could be persistent and do it and take years, but you didn't use the right tool. And that's what persuasion and influence is all about, having the right tool. So we go into this telemarketing room, and I couldn't sell anything. People were rejecting me, and you know, I was making a lot of friends, but they weren't buying anything. I remember this one lady, we really connected, and she found out it was my birthday, and so she even sent me a birthday card. I'm thinking, I don't want a birthday card. I want your credit card. And so I focused every job, what's working, what's not working, finding out things. And now we're at the point of the Persuasion Institute that we've mastered this world. We're changing lives. People are doubling and tripling their income because you look at anything from real estate to network marketing to the internet to being an entrepreneur, it all comes back to persuasion. You want to increase your income? It all comes back to persuasion, influence, call to action, and things we'll be talking about today. And if you're asking yourself, what's taking so long in your business? This is the reason. You have to be able to connect with people. Now, here's the challenge that we're noticing as we go through this process. There's something that social psychologists call the woebegone effect. This is where you rate your skills above average compared to everyone else. We all have this tendency to do that. In fact, as I take persuasion IQs across the country and tell people where they rank in the 10 critical areas, the area they say they're the strongest at is communication and people skills. And the surveys, when we talk to people after they've talked to them, that's where they're rated the weakest. So really, I want to kind of back up and open your eyes and realize that you are rating yourself above average when maybe you shouldn't be. You might be that annoying salesperson or persuader that you don't think you are. You might think you're a guest, but your prospects think you're a pest. Doesn't matter what you think, it's what your prospects think. Why do you think they're not calling you back? There's some issues we need to deal with here. Because when you talk about the woebegone effect, it's interesting to see that most people rate their income higher than above average. High school students rate their leadership above average. 90% of business managers rate themselves better than average. 95% of rooms say they're above average drivers. You don't need to be a statistician to realize that those numbers just won't crunch. They just don't work. And so I want you to kind of open your eyes and talk about what we are doing here. What is the important thing you can take from today's call? As I went through this process to categorize what was working, what was not working, my goal was to have the complete pie of persuasion. Because there's a lot of camps out there, and you've noticed them. If you've been studying persuasion out there, you realize there's the people skills camp, the Dale Carnegie. And that's a small piece of the persuasion pie, but if you don't learn anything else, you're just making lots of friends. Then there's the Zig Ziglars, the great trainers who just focus on closing skills. And that can be important, but that's a small piece of the persuasion pie. In fact, most people use closing skills the wrong way. I feel that a closing skill is like trying to get a kiss after a bad date. No. Then people just try to use their power. Do it because I'm the boss. I'm in charge. Then there are those that say, no, trust. Get people to trust you. And that's a big challenge we're talking about today. Trust is at an all-time low. Some just study personality directions. And that can be very important, but again, a small piece of the pie. Some people just use fear and threats. And is that good? No, it's not if you use it all the time. Can you use it every once in a while? Well, sure. When your dentist says only floss the teeth you want to keep, I think that's a legitimate form of fear. And then there's NLP, or what we call neuro-linguistic programming. That is also a small piece of the persuasion pie. Because it's amazing as we talk to consumers, as we talk to prospects, So much has changed in the last 20 years. What worked 20 years ago, even 10 years ago, is not working today. It's not. What we need to do is realize that your prospect has changed. First thing that's changed, hope you're taking notes, is that they're bombarded with over 5,000 persuasive messages a day. They're just hit. They're becoming numb. That's why I call this magnetic persuasion. You can draw people to you. Can you imagine the power, the confidence that you could have to know what to say next, to be able to read your prospect, to understand what they're thinking and feeling? That's the power that I want to give to you, and that can be learned, to understand what to say, what not to say, to be able to read their face and to read their body language. Because they will tell you everything you need to know to persuade them through their body language and through what they say. See, most rookie persuaders, and excuse my language here, is they vomit all these features and benefits, and they actually oversell, overpersuade, and they suck the energy out of the prospect. And most people say, well, I don't do that. No, you are. There's one or two things they're worried about, and you can fill in the blanks later. So they're bombarded. Now, number two, the second reason your prospect has changed is they're more skeptical than ever before. You know, they see things happening out. They're very skeptical. What if it's too good to be true? What if they're lying? And the third, they're more educated than ever before, both on a high school and a college level, and they have access to more information than ever before with our good friend, the World Wide Web. You know, 20 years ago, when you went to buy a car, you just had to believe the person. Now you go to the web and find out what every dealer in the state is charging for that car. What is the suggested price? What do most people pay for? What's the blue book? So much great information that you have access to. And those are the things we need to focus on as we go through this and understand that people want to feel your conviction. They want to feel your passion. They want to be persuaded. They're wearing a little badge that says, persuade me, please help me make a decision. Because there's so much information out there, they would love for someone to help them make a decision. But a lot of times you get the knee-jerk reaction, or you get the lies, just like what you do. You know, you walk into a furniture store, and they push a little too hard, and you say, I'm just looking, or I need to talk to my spouse, or I'll come back later. You're not coming back. Or you go into a clothing store, and you need to buy a shirt. The beautiful young lady says, can I help you? And you say, I'm just looking. So those are knee-jerk reactions that you need to take a look at. Now, there's a couple of things I've really noticed with great persuaders I want to give you before we talk about the three things that will really help you out here and help you understand that there are some things that you really need to look at in the world of persuasion. The first is self-persuasion. If you can't persuade yourself, you really think you can persuade other people? The question is, have you ever had a day when you didn't feel like doing the things you know you needed to do? That would be every day. Do you really understand motivation, how it works, mindset? And so when you look at great persuaders, the first thing you have to realize is that they have overcome their fear. Fear is an interesting thing. A newborn baby is only born with two fears. A brand new baby has two fears, the fear of falling and the fear of loud noises. That's it. Those are the only fears that you were born with. So the fear of criticism, the fear of public speaking, the fear of failure, the fear of success, all these fun little fears, you've learned them. And so the great news is that you can unlearn them. That's so important to understand. You know, public speaking is the top fear. Right below that, of course, is dying. And our friend Jerry Seinfeld says, kind of makes fun of that, says, well, that would mean that people would rather be in the casket than given the eulogy. And of course, that makes no sense at all. Now, Napoleon Hill, author of Think and Grow Rich, we talked about the fear of criticism. Why are you so worried about what other people think? This is just holding you back. Follow your heart. Learn to do the things that you want to do. Napoleon Hill said this about the fear of criticism. The fear of criticism robs man of his initiative, destroys his power of imagination, limits his individuality, and takes away his self-reliance. Because when you look at successful people, they follow their heart. It doesn't matter what people think. We call these people the living dead. We call them parasites. Your family and friends, when you tell them about your goals, your dreams, your aspirations, And the people closest to you, they spit on your dreams. They pull you down. I don't have the time to go into the psychology of that, but bottom line is they see a spark in your eye. They see you doing something that they've always wanted to accomplish, and either consciously or subconsciously, they're going to pull you down. That's just how it works. I mean, you can sit next to Aunt Edna at a family gathering and not even talk to her, and you can feel her sucking the energy out of you. So learn to follow your heart, face and confront your fears. I know they feel real to you, but you have to get past those. And we've noticed that with great persuaders. Again, we've taken all the great persuaders out there. We talked to the great persuaders, we talked to prospects, and we've categorized the 10 areas you need to master to become a great persuader. Can you imagine having the power to know what to do and say in every situation? To know if it's a real objection or a knee-jerk reaction? To know if they're just saying that to get rid of you? To know why they're not calling you back? Can you imagine taking the power of persuasion and putting it in a spray can, an aerosol can, and selling it? Wow, how much would you pay for that? To know that you could persuade other people, your family, your friends, your coworkers, your prospects, your clients. You imagine having that spray? Well, I don't think I want you spray them. They're, oh, I'll take three. I mean, those are the type of things that we need to teach you. And it's accessible to you. I studied human nature, the human psychology. We're finding out things that introverts are now out persuading extroverts. Think about it. Extroverts, the old style sales type, that's not what people want. They want an introvert who listens and asks questions, who is a consultant. That's very important to understand as you go through the world of persuasion and influence. What do people want to hear? Because the moment they sense you are trying to persuade them, whether it's a great deal or not, human nature is this. This is what's starting to happen. They will put up the brick wall right in front of you, and they will resist every form of persuasion. That's just what it comes down to. I remember my wife was driving out of the driveway with my son. Oh, he must have been 3 or 4 at the time, and his friend sitting in the back. And my wife says, buckle up. Mitchell, can you buckle up? And he says, I can't. And she says, you do it all the time. Can't you buckle up? And he says, I can't. So she pulls over, buckles him up, and as she's shutting the door, my wife overhears my son say, you see what I can make my mom do? Ouch. And that's the same with your prospect. Once they sense you're doing that, they're going to shut down. And so great persuaders, you help other people persuade themselves. That's the key. That is the key that you are looking for as we go through this process to be able to do that. So first of all, look at your fears. Look at your ability to motivate yourself. And the biggest one that I've really noticed with top persuaders, and I can tell you when this category is high in the persuasion IQ, it dictates a lot of other things of success, is their personal development program. Because there's a direct relationship between your personal development and your income. That's just how it is. Are you watching TV or reading books? That tells me a lot. When I go into your office, I look at the books that you're reading or the CDs you're listening to your car. Are you listening to CDs in your car or audios? Or are you listening to the radio? What a difference it makes. Are you going to the seminars? Are you treating yourself like a do-it-yourself program? Here is what we're finding out. A couple things. Harvard study shows that those who are learning and growing every day, they're more optimistic about life. They're more enthusiastic about where they're going, what they're going to accomplish. But those who aren't learning and growing every day become negative, pessimistic about themselves and their future. That is important to understand. Because the phrase that's cost you $1 million in your life right now, I already know what it is, oh, I'll figure it out on my own. No, that's not how successful people think. When Donald Trump has a problem, does he figure it out on his own? Does he go to the yellow pages to find the cheapest person possible? No, he finds the best, pays whatever it costs, because he knows in the long run that'll make him a lot more money. And there's different stages of personal development, different success levels. And it's interesting to find out when people look at books and tapes, that's a great start. I really encourage those. But the reality is those that'll start a book, this is a nonfiction personal development book, will start it, finish it, and apply one principle from it is less than 1%. And you know that just based on the books that you have. It's a good start. For example, if you want to learn how to play basketball, sure, you should probably read a few books. That would give you a basic foundation. But if you really wanted to learn how to do that, you need to get out on the court. You need to find a coach or a mentor. Michael Jordan, one of the greatest basketball players that ever lived, needed a coach, someone to watch him, to look at his weaknesses and his strengths. So it depends how fast you want to learn. If you've got all the time in the world, figure it out on your own. If you want to read the books, you got a 1% chance. Seminars are pretty good. They get up there. But when you're talking about 90 to 100% success, you're talking about coaching and mentoring. That's what we're noticing as we're analyzing persuaders, is that they do have a personal development program. Because you need to understand and learn and grow in every day. There's so much happening in the world. You really need to spend time doing that. So just understand those are critical factors in your success. And I want to make sure that as I talk about the three different areas, that you really get a feel for what we're talking about here. I really want you to help you understand some things that you can work on. I want you to know this is based on research and study. It works. And I want you to just start thinking about some of these things in your world and things that you need to work on. So here's the first one we're noticing. You want a tool that you really need to think about that'll dramatically increase your income? Tell you one right now, it's trust. Like, whoa, people trust me. No, they don't. And that's the biggest disconnect that we're seeing. Trust overall has dropped 6 percentage points in the last 5 years, overall on average. And this is what we're noticing at the Persuasion Institute as we monitor the persuader and the prospect. And we have questions that we ask them. So we watch them go through their cycle, and we go to the persuader, and we have a series of questions. And one of the questions is, did you build trust? Did they trust you? And the persuader, 9 out of 10 times, will say, yes, they trusted me. And they were firm, and they believed that with all their heart. Yep, they trusted me. They're going to call me back. And then we talk to the prospect. Again, we have a series of questions. One is, did you trust that person? Did you trust them? And 1 out of 10 times, they said they trusted them. Do you see the challenge there? I know you're a good person. I know you deserve to be trusted. But that doesn't mean that people trust you. Because here's the thing you really need to understand about trust. 20 years ago, the mindset was, I trust you, give me a reason not to. Now, it's, I don't trust you, give me a reason to trust you. So you're starting out on a different level. You can't assume trust. And there's a lot of areas of trust, and I could spend all night on this, but I want to give you some of the areas of trust that'll really help you out. Something for you really to think about as you go through this process. Things that you can actually work on. And ask other people. Don't necessarily ask yourself, because, again, the woebegone effect, you're rating yourself higher than you actually are. But think about these. The first amazing thing to realize is at the Persuasion Institute, we're running some numbers as far as professions. What professions are trusted more than others just based on being in a certain profession? And profession does matter, obviously. You know, if you're a policeman versus a used car salesman, the inherent initial trust is going to be very, very different. The interesting thing to note, the highest on the list, the highest trusted professions, there's three. Pharmacists, that's an interesting one, right? Pharmacists. And you have firemen and nurses. And those are all well below 60%. That means out of 10 people, 6 will trust them, 4 won't. And those are the top of the list. You look at clergy at 59%, medical doctors at 57%, college teachers at 53%, police at 49%, bankers at 30%, journalists at 22%, business executives at the 21%. You now have the very top of the list, and we're already down to 21%. Ouch! Stockbrokers, 19%, Congress, 17%, real estate, agents and investors at 16%, lawyers at 14%, insurance sales at 11%, advertisers at 10%, network marketers at 9%, and car sales are at 5%. You're probably on average out of 10 people, you might have built trust with 2. And that's what's interesting thing about when I want to talk about persuasion, you have to understand here, and this is a number you need to write down and really understand, 95% of persuasion, up to 95%, involves a subconscious trigger, a feeling inside of us. Because you know when you're talking to someone, you know, I like this person, I don't like this person, I trust this person, I don't trust this person, I'm going to buy it. A lot of times we can't quantify or identify that feeling, we just feels right. And that's what people go off. And certain things you do are going to scare people away. They just doesn't feel right to them, and they don't know what it is, they just don't trust you. They can't put their finger on it, but they don't trust you. And that's why I want to spend time talking about a few of the C's of trust. The first one is character. And that's you on the inside. And as Zig Ziglar says, the most important persuasion you have in your entire arsenal is integrity. So when you look at character, it's honesty, integrity, sincerity. Doesn't matter what you think, it's how you're coming across. Character. Again, I don't have a lot of time, but I want to give you some basic information here. And character is part of self-discipline. Another part of trust people don't realize is competence. Competence. Do they feel like you have the knowledge, the intelligence, the ability to do this? Now, when you talk about confidence, it's perceived. It's not reality. It's how you come across. Then, of course, the next is confidence. Your assurance, your belief, your conviction, maybe even your passion. How are you coming across? You have to be confident. J. Connor Levinson, a guerrilla marketing fame, says, confidence is the number one thing that sways people in the world of persuasion. You need to be confident. And I just want to open up your eyes and talk about a few of these things. Now, there's other aspects of trust, but let's talk about these first three. Character, competence, and confidence. In an example, let's say you have a toothache. You moved into a new area. You've moved to a different state. And you want one of your neighbors to recommend a dentist. Pretty simple. And dentists don't always have high trust. And you want a recommendation because social validation increases trust. So you ask your first neighbor, can you recommend a dentist? He says, oh, no, a great dentist belongs to my church group. Great character. But it's just not very competent. In fact, last time I was there, he stuck a needle completely through my cheek. And my question to you is, would you go to that dentist? And the answer, of course, is absolutely not. Even though they're a great person, great character, if you don't feel they're competent or they're not competent, you will not trust them and you will not do business with them. Or you flip it around, you talk to another neighbor and you say, hey, can you recommend a dentist? And, oh, I know the best in the state, graduated top of the class. Everyone knows he's the best. He's really good at what he does. Although he just doesn't have much character. You know, in fact, you have to wait 2 or 3 weeks. He's in jail for insurance fraud, and he tends to put in 3 or 4 more fillings than you actually need. But, oh, he's the best. He is the most competent. And my question to you, would you go to that dentist? The answer being, absolutely not. And then there's confidence. Imagine sitting in that dental chair. You've been sitting there for a little while. They've taken x-rays. You're wondering where the dentist is. They finally come in. Sit down and they put the x-rays in the light, like you have any idea what that means. And they look at the dentist, looks you right in the eye and says, you know, I've really never been good at reading these. I think you need a root canal. What do you think? Wow. Would you trust that dentist? Not on your life. And those are just a few of the aspects of trust that you really need to understand. As you go through this process, do they trust you? And the answer is usually no, even though you've said yes. So I really want you to kind of open it up. I know you rank yourself high in trust. I know you're a good person, trustworthy person. That doesn't matter. It's how you're coming across. So that's the first thing to take a look at. Because once somebody trusts you, you don't need logic and statistics. You can tell them what to do and they're going to do it. That's a higher form of persuasion and influence. That's what you're looking for. The second area I want to talk about is interesting, as we've noticed. And I kind of package this under mannerisms. Kind of what we do and say is, and this is important, every gesture or every word you use will either attract or distract from your message, will either attract or repel your prospect or client. And people don't realize this. We're noticing one gesture, certain things you do with your hands can trigger subconscious trigger in somebody where they feel uncomfortable and they won't purchase from you. They won't be persuaded by you. Now, I want to talk about the second aspect of that is what we call verbal packaging. This is one of the 12 laws of persuasion that I've studied to figure out what's working, what's not working. Because it's the little things that make a big difference and people don't realize that. Let's talk about this. You have to understand that words affect our mind, our attitudes, and our emotions. And if we use the right words, we come across as more credible, competent, and convincing. Words trigger emotions. Emotions are part of your subconscious. Remember, 95% of persuasion involves a subconscious trigger. Now, just kind of sit back for a second, and I want you to think about these words. I'm going to read a list of words here, and just kind of get a feel for how they make you feel. murder, hate, depressed, cancer, despair. Okay, hold on. Let's switch it up. Wealth, happiness, inspired, joy, success, millionaire. Did you feel the difference? Of course you did. It was not only the word, but it was how I said the word. Both matter. You have to take a look at your word choice, the words you use and don't use. You look at the airline industry, for example. They know how to package their words. You're sitting there buckling up your seatbelt, and they say, in the event of a water landing. Hello? That's crashy. They don't say when the plane hits the water and the wings rip off. The event of a water landing. There's no life jackets on board. There's flotation devices. There's not a barf bag. It says, for motion discomfort. They don't clean a plane. They refresh it. The plane's never late. It's delayed. They've never lost my luggage. It's been misplaced, and I can go on and on and on. Even in the world, there's no longer used cars because it has a bad association trigger. They're now pre-owned. I was sitting at a fancy restaurant. I was going to get a steak. I said, what's the difference between a filet and a ribeye? And they say, well, the ribeye is a little more marbled. Verbal packaging. They didn't say it's fattier. Say it was marbled. Even my students in the university, instead of giving them a final, I give them a celebration of knowledge. Well, okay, it doesn't work very well, but it's a lot of fun to try. And that's true with verbal packaging. What words are you going to use? Are you going to use the word if or when? Try or will? Could or can? You feel a difference? Those are words you really have to understand. Words make a big difference. Like the word but is a word persuaders stay away from. They'll use softer words like and or however. But negates everything in front of it. Oh, this is a great product because of this, 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 and this. But you've just ruined your whole presentation. And you didn't even know it. Or if you're married, you look great tonight, dear, but you're probably sleeping on the couch. Now, one of the power words, well, there's quite a few. There's 17 power words, but let me give you one. Because the way the human brain works, when you look at the human decision-making process, we want a reason to do things. And when you say because, it's a knee-jerk reaction that you've given us a reason, sometimes even when it wasn't valid. One of my favorite studies, a very famous study, is done by Elaine Langer. She was a professor at a university. And it was interesting. She went to a line, a photocopy machine, wait until there's about 5 students. And she tried to see compliance levels if she could cut in line. And she would say, excuse me, may I cut in line because I'm in a rush. And she had a 94% compliance, pretty good. So a few weeks later, she tried again a few other ways. She took out the word because. That's all she did. So she said, excuse me, may I cut in line? I'm in a rush. So the only difference here, again, is the word because went from 94% down to just around 60%. Now, here's the interesting. The third time she tries, she said, excuse me, may I cut in line because I need to make some copies. Well, duh, why else would she be in line? But it went from the 60s up to 93%. Words matter. Are you seeing words like contract or sign here? One of the biggest ones we're noticing lately, and I just can't believe this, is you call a company, even the large companies, they say, let me transfer you to sales. Talk about building a wall before you need to. Nobody wants to be sold. No one wants to be transferred to sales. Jeez, consultant, guidance counselor, I don't care what you call it. There's so many things you need to take a look at when you talk about your words, your vocal technique. Are you using vocal fillers? Those are the things that make a huge difference as you go down this road. Every gesture, every word makes a big difference in your success. How you say things. And it's interesting, if you want to have some fun with this, that instead of calling somebody dumb or stupid or ignorant, if you want to verbally package it, you can say, well, you know, if brains were tax, he'd get a rebate. Or got into the gene pool when the lifeguard wasn't watching. Or the wheel is spinning, but the hamster's dead. Gates are down, lights are flashing, but the train isn't coming. That's verbal packaging. Because your goal is a great persuader when we interview people. It's like watching a movie or hearing a movie. They can see it, taste it, touch it, feel it. They're there. They can see themselves using your product or service. That's what great persuaders do through vocal techniques, through their nonverbal actions, through verbal packaging, through the words they use, you master that world, that one law of persuasion, you're going to come a long way. And before I get into the last one, I want to talk about something that's really important in the world of persuasion. The first one we talked about, of course, was trust. The second one we talked about, verbal packaging and nonverbal behavior. One thing we're noticing, and it's interesting, at the Persuasion Institute, we can develop a script for corporations or for people that has, you know, high 80-90% success rate. We've gone through it. We've studied it. We do it. We hand it out, very successful, very successful. Then they hand it to somebody, and it doesn't work. And that bothered me for a while because, I know, we've tested it. We're getting high rates here. And all of a sudden, oh, it doesn't work. And I kind of went back, and, you know, one of the big things with persuasion and influence is passion. Passion. Do you believe in what you're saying? Here's my question to you, just something to think about. Are you singing the song or are you singing the words? Let me repeat that for you. Are you singing the song or are you just going through the motions and singing the words? Because when you sing the words, you don't care and you're going through the motions, you haven't prepared, your prospect or your client senses that. And passion, more than anything else, recruits the hearts and minds of the people that you talk to. It's also a higher form of persuasion. That's why I got in this business, because as I started studying persuasion influence, and I've read thousands of books, thousands of studies, I've been to all the seminars to compile this information, the big kicker for me was the things that I was being taught not only offended me, I'd never use them on my family, and I felt that they were very manipulative. And that's not what we're looking for as we go through this process. We want you to feel good. We want you to feel confident. We want you to be able to understand and do exactly what you want to do with your business or your company. Everything you want in life is on the other side of persuasion. That's what the important aspect is of this whole process. That's what we're going to focus on. But with that, go out and have massive success. Have an incredible evening and good night.